Welcome to the Files of the Disclosure Agency. My name is Don Emilio Zeno, producer of the Files of the Disclosure Agency, coming to you from our production center in Montreal, Canada. At FDA, we are proud to provide you with authentic information about disclosure, the public acknowledgement by government of an extraterrestrial presence on Earth, as manifested by the phenomenon known as unidentified aerial phenomenon. Our goal at FDA is to educate, challenge, and inspire our audience with incisive journalism, knowledgeable guests, and a perspective that will take you to the edge of your reality and beyond. The Files of the Disclosure Agency is a production of the ZLAN Communications Network and is written, produced, and sent to you from our studios in Toronto and Montreal, Canada. You can find all episodes of the Files of the Disclosure Agency on our ZLAN Communications website or simply Google ZLAN Communications. Please join me in welcoming the host of the Files of the Disclosure Agency from our sound studios in Toronto, Canada, Victor Vigiani. Good day. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Don, and thank you very much for that inspiring introduction.
You're most kind. Listen, I'm not going to pretend I don't know who your VIP guest is tonight, so why don't you take it from there and impress us all?
Okay, we'll see where it goes. And that was Don Emilio Zeno, the producer of the Files of the Disclosure Agency. He's in our Montreal studios making sure that everything is running just right behind the scenes for this episode of FDA. And I want to thank Don for his diligent hard work in helping me put together this episode of FDA. In a few minutes, we are going to be speaking with the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group, Stephen Bassett. Now, I'm not one who necessarily likes reading bios for the introduction of our guests here on FDA, but in this case, it's very instructive that we listen carefully to what Stephen Bassett has done, what he is currently doing, but more importantly, what he plans to do with this idea called disclosure. Stephen Bassett considers the most important facet of the disclosure issue as exposing the truth behind the extraterrestrial presence that is now engaging the human race. And as you'll hear in the upcoming interview, Steve has some very definite ideas about what this presence is and politically where it's headed. So here's a little bit about the Paradigm Research Group and the man behind it, Stephen Bassett. Stephen Bassett, our guest this evening, is the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group, PRG. PRG was founded in 1996 to end a government-imposed embargo on the truth behind extraterrestrial-related phenomena. He has spoken to audiences all around the world about the implications of disclosure, the formal confirmation by heads of state of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. Stephen Bassett has given over 1,200 radio and television interviews, and PRG's advocacy work has been extensively covered by national and international media, included being featured on CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, The Washington Post, and The New York Times. In 2013, PRG organized a citizen hearing on disclosure at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. So join me in welcoming Steve Bassett. Steve, great to have you with us.
It's my pleasure, Victor. Yeah. Always good to be with you. We've known each other a long time.
Yeah.
You are a committed activist. You have never slowed down, and I think we're getting close to the finish line.
Well, thank you very much, Steve, for those kind words. I do appreciate it. And I do concur with you that we are, in fact, getting close to the finish line, especially given the recent set of circumstances with respect to what's going on in Washington and in the Senate, which we'll no doubt get to later. But what I'd like to do right now is have you talk to us a little bit about your new project at PRG, the Paradigm Research Group, Disclosure Wire, your new initiative. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Disclosure Wire is the latest project of Paradigm Research Group. It's a podcast, not just any podcast. This is the latest project of PRG, Disclosure Wire. The domain is disclosurewire.org, and it is specifically created to participate in what I believe are the final weeks and months of the truth embargo on the ET issue by the U.S. government to try to have some impact, to engage it, to educate. I'm not the principal player in terms of these final weeks and months, but I've certainly been around long enough to be able to interpret it for the average person who doesn't read every single article that comes out on this issue and what have you. But more importantly, and this is why I moved back from California for this reason, it is based in Washington. It's the first broadcast out of Washington, D.C. on the issue, all things exopolitics, I like to say. I was able to get an office in the National Press Building, and the studio is there, therefore here, and it's 2.5 blocks from the White House. Half of the tenants here are press. Right? There is a National Press Club upstairs, which I belong to. We're not far from the Capitol and not far from all of the major mainstream Washington news bureaus. So the logic was I could get that going and develop a reputation and people get to know about it. Then I was in a perfect position to interview people in studio on this issue that had not spoken about this about the ET issue before. And there were lots of academics and political people, as well as journalists operating in this town who know about this issue. They're not stupid. They're not ignorant. They know what's going on. And at least certainly they notice what's developing in the public domain. And I think many of them have concluded intellectually that there is an ET presence. That doesn't mean they're going to talk about it. You just happen to think ETs are undoubtedly here. You're not going to talk about that. In fact, most people do not talk about that. But that's changing for reasons that we'll talk about. And people are coming forward. And so I wanted to get myself in a position where I might be able to persuade some of these individuals, people who are known in their fields, whether it's journalism or politics, academia, who would be willing and felt comfortable in talking with me about it in studio, which is much more powerful. But because of the pandemic, it will not be in studio. Right. It will be online. So that was one of the key ideas, to get that out there. The other was to inform the public on what's going on, to trying to assess all the rapidly unfolding developments that have taken place in the last 3 years, and to get across the idea of disclosure, what it means, why it's very possibly happening. And then ultimately, and we can double back on this, the fundamental reason for the disclosure wire is I was going to use that along with a lot of media. I'm back in the media game full bore now with nearly 38 interviews booked, of which I think 14 are completed and another 24 are on the calendar.
Right.
And I expect that booking to be at the 100 level and ultimately hopefully on cable news. Why? Because I think I know what's coming, and knowing the way politicians are and the way history runs, it's possible that those involved may back out. They may get clay feet. Feet of clay, cold feet, whatever you want to call it, and decide maybe we need to kick the can down the road another couple of years. I'm going to do what I can to prevent that. And by that, I mean I'm going to lock the door behind them. Do everything I can to make it impossible for them to back away from moving forward, which is what they have to do, and not be able to delay any further. So that's the overall game plan for Paradigm Research Group, and the podcast is key to it.
Right. You mentioned a second ago how the conversation has changed. How do you think the entire conversation about the whole issue has changed over the past, what's happened in the past 3 years? How has it sort of mutated into something different? Because I have vivid recollections of how we used to talk about this on the radio, but I have a feeling that the conversation has, in fact, the tone of it has changed, and there's an immediacy there that wasn't there before.
The way the issue has been addressed by the general public, by media, has always been changing. It's had some ups and downs, admittedly, but from 47 on, it's progressed in one way or another. More people learn about it, more journalists know about it, a few more articles and so forth. And there were some periods when things kind of went quiet. And it started to really pick up after the Cold War ended in 91. I've got thousands of articles since 91 linked on my website right now. You can go read all thousands of them.
Well, I just did that this afternoon, Steve. You have 11,771 media articles on there. And that is absolutely astounding for you to take that kind of archive into your website. It's just amazing.
Been working on it since 2006. These are all mainstream articles. There's no UFO press there. There's no what we'll call hard tabloids, quality tabloids, yeah, but hard tabloids. So this is essentially mainstream coverage, and it's really amazing. It goes back to 1947, but most of it starts much later than that because it's much harder to find links to articles. But the total number of articles that have been written related to the subject by mainstream media, regular press, I'm going to speculate is at least in the 30,000 article range, might be higher, and that doesn't include foreign language. So ironically, since 1947, there has been a massive number of articles written about the subject. And so you're thinking, well, if that's true, then we should pretty much have gotten to the bottom of this by now, and there shouldn't be any discussion of a truth embargo. But while they have written about it, they have not investigated it. Right. They left that to us, or in the government, which says it doesn't, right? In other words, the New York Times will write up something that happens. Say 1952, when the Pentagon moved to sort of pull us away from the events of that time in July of 52, a lot of sightings all over Washington, D.C. The Washington Post could have assigned three reporters to say, this isn't adding up. There's something bigger going on here, and I want you to go find out what it is, right? Mm. And so these reporters would then start hounding the DOD and cornering people in parking lots or whatever the hell and digging. And they might have found some interesting things, but they didn't. They've never done that. I call it going Woodward Bernstein. That is why, in spite of those tens of thousands of articles, the truth embargo remains to this day. And but that is changing too. And I think we had a break coming up. And after the break, I'll go into how what has happened in the last 3 months has altered the media coverage, the government interactions, the perception of the public.
I think we can see now that just after approximately 10 minutes into this interview, you can feel the palpable understanding this man has of this issue and how he consistently remains forward-looking about where the thing is going. He does allude to the past, but then again, he also uses the past to enhance the perceptions that you and I have as novices into this issue. It's a rare skill. But for now, let's take a short break, and you just stay exactly where you are. We'll be right back. Talking with Stephen Bassett, the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group, from his residence just a couple of blocks away from the White House. This is astounding. We've just been talking about his new project, Disclosure Wire, and he is going to be front and center in Washington, bringing the latest kind of revelations and insights right from Washington, D.C. You were mentioning, Steve, a couple of things before the break that you wanted to get into. Why don't you just take off and go in whatever direction you need to?
There's a lot of background to this that some of your viewers and listeners may not know, but I can't obviously spend that much time. Let me just put it as succinctly as possible.
Right.
After decades of truth embargo and not really being able to penetrate through that embargo to get the truth out to the American people, something major took place back in 2015-16. Essentially, as best as I can assess, and this is not information that I've gotten from some insider that sent me a write-up or anything. No, this is my best estimate. I could be wrong, all right? But I have some confidence in this, and that a significant element within the military intelligence complex itself, and there's always been people that supported getting this out, but they simply could not take action. Came to, mutual agreement that we needed to move forward, and it was time to end the embargo. That simple. But they couldn't do it. They're working in the Pentagon. They're working in the military intelligence complex. They're working for the government, and their boss is the President of the United States. So unilaterally starting to make policy moves on this or do things that could affect the policy, truth embargo, would have been a very bad idea. What to do? It appears what they did is came together and decided we're going to support the creation of a non-governmental organization or an NGO that is not part of the Pentagon, made up of civilians who are no longer under the employ of the Pentagon or the CIA, the military intelligence complex, but had long careers. In other words, they're established, high security clearances, PhDs, intel operatives, whatever. They used to work for the government, but now they're not. I guess you could say they're retired. Some are semi-retired, may have the odd contract, but they're not working directly for the government. So by doing that, they made it possible to do some things which were simply not possible. This organization ultimately was formed and finally announced in October of 2017, and it was called the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences. An interesting name. Fairly nice, not particularly scary. And it was made up of very high-level careerists from within the military intelligence complex. But it was CEO'd by a 40-year-old musician, famous, very successful, named Tom DeLonge. Never worked for the government, never had security clearances, but very popular, well-known in social media, and so forth. And so it was, a soft launch in a way. It was not scary, and it was going to be involved in a number of projects, including entertainment, documentaries, books, things like that, but also research related to the ET issue, which it was clear was a significant interest of this organization. Mm-hmm. Okay, so far so good. No problem. Then, and by the way, they also raised quickly about $2.5 million as a public benefit corporation, which obviously was helpful. And so people can actually own shares in this project, To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences, which normally would have just been notable, like, wow, that's interesting. I wonder what they're going to do, except over the next 2 months, this organization, some of its key people, delivered major news stories to the New York Times, names, dates, places. The New York Times vetted all of that very thoroughly and ultimately published two articles in the December 16th, 2017 New York Times, below the fold, two front page articles written by three authors, Elaine Cooper, Leslie Kane, and Ralph Blumenthal, a two-time Pulitzer Prize winner, Ralph Blumenthal. And these were bombshell news articles. Revealed there had been a program that was set up within the Department of Defense investigating the issue that we didn't know about. Actually two programs, actually. One called ATIP and the other one called ALSAP, Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, and Advanced Aerial Weapons, something or another, whatever. The point is that Harry Reid, that these programs were backed, particularly the first one, ALSAP, by Harry Reid, that most of the money that he helped to raise with some other senators went to Robert Bigelow and others working with Bigelow to do a bunch of research. He's a billionaire. That was announced. These were significant stories. But then they also released three gun camera footages, films, from F-18 intercepts of UAPs that have been allowed to remove from the Pentagon and ultimately delivered to the New York Times. No gun camera footage from any intercept planes has ever been released by a government ever prior to that. There was a leak once, and it turned up in a French documentary. Nobody noticed, nobody cared. But in terms of formal release, it never happened. This was a milestone breakthrough. Why? Because there are thousands of these gun camera clips of French, Canadian, Australian, United Kingdom, American, Chinese, Soviet, Russian planes who I guarantee you will come up to greet you if you're flying through their airspace and you got no business being there. And if you give them a hard time, they will shoot you down. And so when these ET craft would turn up over their airspace, they would be met. They would send up these jets to intercept. They couldn't catch them and they couldn't do anything about them, but they could film them. And of course, you always film in these kinds of engagements. You just don't go up there and take a look-see and then come back and draw a picture of it for your commander. Mm-hmm. You film it. And the film cameras are usually put in one of the gun slots, which is why they call them gun cameras. Okay, thousands of them. Never been released because the release of many of these would almost end the truth embargo. So three of them turn up at the New York Times, which then puts them up on their website. And since then, they've been seen all over the world. They're all over the internet, YouTube. They've been seen by, I would guess, hundreds of millions of people, possibly a billion or more people, have seen these gun camera clips of UAPs doing things that our craft cannot do. Okay, so this is huge. December 2017. Mm-hmm. Normally, that would have escalated, generated. It's generated now, counting other developments, nearly 700 articles related to the To the Stars Academy, the article in the New York Times, and other responses and so forth. 700 articles on my website, earmarked, by the way. Normally, that would have gone and grown and grown and grown and probably would have led to major developments leading to disclosure. Except the last 4 years have not been normal. They have been unusual. Other countries have gone through unusual times like this. Some countries are going through it right now. We know about it. We sympathize with them from afar. Wow, that's tough. You got to deal with that. That's really a shame. Well, it happened to us. And so we have had 4 years of political chaos, intense partisanship, violence, disruption, gridlock, and whatever else you can think of. And that simply precluded the ability of the public and the media to fully run with this extraordinary new information. Okay, so it delayed, it created a somewhat delayed reaction.
Could the media not walk and chew gum at the same time with highlighting this, or were they so consumed by the chaos of those 4 years that it just overwhelmed them?
No, it's not like walking and chewing gum. It's like trying to text on your cell phone in the middle of a Category 5 hurricane outside.
Got it.
It's like that.
Yeah,
all
got
right?
it. Yeah.
So, but what did come from this? Well, for those that go and read the articles and try to get caught up on this, this moment, those articles hit the front page of the New York Times, was what I call a watershed moment or the Rubicon. After that, there was no going back. We had worked up until that point. See, it was 67. I mean, I'm sorry, 2017, which would have been the, if I've got it right, the 70th anniversary. That was the 70th anniversary of Roswell, right? That July. That changed everything. And so what starts to unfold is the To the Stars Academy continues to then conduct and do projects, perhaps at a slower pace than they would have had things been differently politically. And then there's responses to those projects. So the one of the most important things they did after the New York Times is they had doing a lot of filming from the beginning when they set up and got going. They were able to do a series for History Channel called Unidentified, Inside America's UFO Investigation. They did two seasons of that, total of 14 episodes, ending in, I think, September or late August of 2020. That had impact, very significant impact. And then they were doing other things behind the scenes. Clearly, we were in a new era. And the confirmation of that came when various organizations and people started to respond to it. In other words, it was no longer possible to sit back and play dumb and go, what are these UAP, what are UFOs, what are UAPs? None of that. No, they couldn't do it. And it began with the Navy. The Navy was particularly caught in a tough spot when the Two of the Stars went to the New York Times, because one of the gun camera footages from the Nimitz event, which is a major case that we didn't know much about. It was sort of talked about, but we didn't know a lot. There were the auditor witnesses who had come forward in the deep past. But 2004 is when a fleet of craft of non-human origin, because they were doing things human craft cannot do, was being seen and photographed and caught on radar by the Nimitz carrier group, 2004. And the Navy sat on it for the next 13 years. They simply weren't letting it out. They withheld the information. They put people under non-disclosure. And suddenly, there it is, all over the New York Times. So the Navy was in a tough spot, very embarrassing. They wisely chose to get on board the disclosure train. They did a number of things. First, they announced that they were revising the protocols for their pilots and encounters with these things. Mm-hmm. Then they announced that they were archiving the stuff and encouraging their pilots to report. Then the Navy announced that the film that had been shown to the New York Times was in fact from F-18s, Navy F-18s. Then they acknowledged the fact that what those films saw were unidentified craft. This is the Navy getting on board, all right? The Army got on board. Suddenly they announced that they were doing a cooperative research development project with the To the Stars Academy. Small potato thing, not a big deal, involving materiel no money really involved of consequence. Why did they do that? That was the Army's way of saying, we endorse what's going on. We're part of this too, right? It's okay, great. But then we started hearing from politicians. And ultimately what we learned in that area, and what caused me to relocate back from California to Washington and get set up quickly, I moved as fast as I could, was that I was aware that witnesses were coming forward to the To the Stars people. And the key person there was Luis Elizondo. Some of these witnesses were turning up, in addition to the ones that were referred to in the New York Times article and interviewed, others were turning up in their unidentified series on history. Almost all military in every case, with a couple of exceptions. And they were, again, testifying to things they had seen. Some of them had to be in silhouette, but witnesses are coming forward. Later learned that scores of people had been contacting them. Military people have been contacting them. Why? Because it was clear to them now that there had been a sea change, that it may be okay to talk now. Because none of the witnesses that were coming forward to the TTSA were having any problems that we were aware of. They weren't being bothered. And so other people are saying, hey, I can talk now. And they contacted the TTSA. So essentially, I learned that they were accumulating witness testimony, only some of which was turning up on their program, unidentified in history. Okay, fine. Then I learned that they were holding briefings on the Hill. Witnesses, usually pilots, like the Nimitz pilots, but it could have been others, were going up on the Hill and talking to members of Congress. I think sometimes one of the TTSA people were with them, either Elizondo or Mellon, Christopher Mellon, or both. And they were basically briefing off the record, not to be publicized, mm-hmm. No press conference. Members of Congress, including committee chairs. And we know that because a few of these members of Congress did let us know that, for whatever reason.
We're speaking with Stephen Bassett, the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group, and I know he's got a continuum of the flow of the politics, because there's a lot to it. He's really kind of leading us down a scenario that's got an explosive ending. So we'll be back in a minute, and you just stay right where you are.
You are listening to The Files of the Disclosure Agency with your host, Victor Vigiani.
Welcome back, and my name is Victor Vigiani, and you're listening to The Files of the Disclosure Agency. And today we have the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group joining us for a conversation. And Steve Bassett, you take over from here. You go right ahead. And I think you were setting up the flow of information leading up to the political implications within the Senate and Congress.
So I learned, as I said, meetings were being held on the Hill off the record, meaning private background. Which means that whatever the agenda was, it was for down the line, and we couldn't know about it yet. No problem. Then I learned that the president did get a briefing. Pretty sure one or more pilots were there, possibly one of the TTSA people, and that's fine. Got a briefing. It was not extensive, but it was a briefing. That was highly significant. And it was after I learned that I packed up and, as soon as I could, came back to Washington, D.C., this is notable, right? But then there were other responses politically that were notable. One of the members that was briefed, Mark Walker, a Republican, got a little excited. I think basically people were going to be briefed and they were supposed to sit on the information until some future time, but he got a little excited. And so he shot off a letter to the Secretary of Navy at the time, was Spencer, saying, look, I've heard about this, I've heard about that, and what's going on, and we should know more, etc. And Spencer sent him a letter back, sort of, I think, kind of usual thing,
mm-hmm,
sort of
right.
Blowing you off with diplomacy. Interestingly enough, very shortly after that, Spencer was released, he was fired, though it may have been for other reasons. And then after that, essentially, we didn't hear any more from Walker. I think he was told, look, we need to stay down on that. It's not time.
Right.
All right, fine. Then Mark Warner, who is an extremely important Democratic senator and the ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, acknowledged that he had been briefed. Okay, fine. But that was very significant. In other words, they've gotten all the... If they're able to brief a Mark Warner, in the Senate Intel Committee. If he takes that meeting, then essentially any other member of Congress would take that meeting. All right. So how many they've briefed, we don't know, but I think it's dozens at least, and many committee chairs. But then something else happened. The head of the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee is Marco Rubio of Florida. Marco Rubio is a very shrewd and transactional politician, and he made a shrewd political move, knowing, as I believe I know, that major things are in the works with huge implications for the country and for its political leadership. He decided to make a move. In other words, he decided to respond to the unfolding developments, like the Navy did, like the Army did, and others we can talk about later. So what he did is clever. He put language into the pending Senate Intelligence Appropriations Bill, as part of the Defense Appropriations Act, that and it wasn't in the enumerated area. It was in the comments section, though I still think he carries substantial force, though it's not clear if it's the same as the enumerated section, which is essentially an appropriation law. But in any event, and he's saying, and I can read some of it too, I've got it on my website, but the point is that it's saying, look, we need to know more about what's going on in this area. We've been hearing things and so forth. So I'd like certain agencies to report back to us what their status is, what they're doing, and what have you. He specifically mentions the Office of Naval Intelligence, which was noted. Remember, the Navy is the one that was heavily responding to the developments that the TTSA launched, and happened to mention that there was a UAP, which means UFO, only without the baggage, a UAP task force at the ONI, which we didn't even know was there. It had just been set up, probably knowing that this was coming. And so, fine, all good. And then he said, we'd like this report 180 days from the bill signing. Very good. As it happens, the bill wasn't signed till the end of the year, so the deadline is around June 25. So what did Marco Rubio do? Marco Rubio, who was not up for election this time, and injected himself in a big way, got a lot of press from this, into the issue, put down a marker, right? Need some information, 180 days, which is not going to come for six more months, so there's plenty of time. Very safe maneuver. So Marco is involved in the issue now. He's getting a lot of press, but it's done absolutely no political damage to him. Other things have, but not that. So that happened. Okay. It was at this point that I pretty much, cemented in place what my agenda was going to be. And it is this. I am now convinced to a very high degree that the fundamental agenda of the To the Stars Academy from the day it was conceived inside the Pentagon, primarily inside the Pentagon, by people we don't know, and then launched by people we do know, and that goes back 3 to 4.5 years, was that they were going to get the congressional hearings that we have been trying to get since 1968 and could not get.
Yeah, that's the turnkey.
Yeah, a congressional hearing. It was legitimate, but essentially it was nothing. The people that participated were serious, but the event was for show. It was, we held a hearing, now we're done, okay? And then the next year they closed down Blue Book. 52 years ago, we've been trying to get hearings and they've been blocked over and over again. Why? Because any reasonable person that has any knowledge politically in this town knows that if real hearings on this issue were to get underway, the truth embargo would collapse. So we can't have them. So that was their agenda. Fine. And everything that's happened in the last year and a half confirms it. My assessment is this. Luis Elizondo has been the intel professional who has served all over the world, very sharp, very smart, very personable. He is the guy that has been the focus of gathering the witnesses together, going out and talking with them. He's like one of them, right? He's just one of the guys. Even though he's got multiple degrees and tattoos all over, he is a guy, right? And he's talking to these witnesses. He's gathering them up. Some of them we know about, most of them we don't. Meanwhile, their political operative, Christopher Mellon, distinguished career, distinguished background, who's, I think, the major position he held was Assistant Secretary of Defense Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence. So he has had massive connections for decades, not only within the Department of Defense, but on Capitol Hill and the intelligence committees. I mean, he's perfect. He is the one that's been preparing the committee members and other members of Congress for hearings in advance with private off-the-record briefings, not going to talk about it because the issue of hearings was not going to be in play. There was no way there was going to be congressional hearings on this issue during the last administration, period. And any discussion about it would be both distracting, confusing, and not politically helpful to all of those who have been briefed.
Yeah, just so, very quickly, the difference between how the Senate's involved and the possibility of hearings there or whatever, or and the Congress, could you just differentiate between the two? And how will these hearings be placed if they occur? Is it congressional or is it Senate? Just for those who are not familiar.
No.
How does that work?
We have the Congress is the House and the Senate.
Right.
And the hearings would be held in both houses and against multiple committees.
Right. Okay.
And so multiple committee, I believe, chairmen. Mm-hmm. Have been briefed. Now, some of those all of the chairmen that were briefed last year were Republicans, though very likely some of the ranking were briefed as well. I mean, it was logically.
Right.
So I think Warner was briefed along with Rubio, either separately or together. So, but now, very shortly, all of the committee chairs will be Democrat. So the Senate, though, has gotten a lot of attention because Rubio made that maneuver with the intelligence bill and got a lot of press. Now, he's the only person late that actually made an overt maneuver. But I get it. Others, he had a very good reason. He had a good basis to do it. The Defense Appropriations Act, putting it in.
Mm-hmm.
Other members would not have that. And so they're not going to raise their head above the parapet. But he was able to do that. But as I say, under the way he did it and the political situation was, it was a safe play for him. Okay, fine, whatever. So the Senate's a focus, but I assure you it's more than just the Senate.
Okay.
Now, so that was their agenda, to get congressional hearings. Why? Well, there's many reasons, but here's the most important. And I've said this before. The way to disclosure, which is the formal confirmation of the ET presence, it's a capital D event, is always and should have always been through hearings. I've never, you know, gone out and said, we need the president to just walk out in the White House one day and just tell the press, surprise them with announcement. By the way, before I leave, I should mention, yeah, there's extraterrestrials here. Have been for some time, haven't been able to tell you. No, that would not be a good thing. That would be a bad thing. And just not the way, irresponsible to the max. So you have hearings. Witnesses, almost certainly military witnesses, would testify under oath, not one day, but over a period of weeks in front of at least a half a dozen committees, maybe
right.
Staggered, maybe simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that mean? Well, first of all, these hearings will be watched by hundreds of millions of people around the world. That's a big deal. Secondly, the hearings will be cast on the basis of national security, which is politically the appropriate way. It means that any member of Congress or committee chair involved can appropriately say, look, this is clearly a national security matter. We need to know about it. And who's going to challenge that? All right. So, yeah, it's got to be that way. That's OK. That doesn't mean that the issue of the national threat is, in fact, ultimately what this will be about or how it'll turn out. It just means that that's the way you go about these hearings. Military witnesses, of course, is appropriate, maximum gravitas. So once you've had these hearings for about four or five, how many weeks, the evidence will literally mount up in front of the world's eyes, the eyes of the world, and it will be compelling. Now, in 2013, Paradigm Research Group produced a mock congressional hearing. Which would very much be like some of these hearings would take place.
Let me hold you there, Steve, just for our break here. And on the other side of the break, I want you to continue that line of thought. And also what I'd like to do is I want to address the question of how the United States government has sort of commandeered control over the secrecy with other countries. We're going to take a short break. And on the other side of the break, we'll just jump down whatever rabbit hole comes up next. You just stay right where you are. ¶¶ Welcome back. This is the Files of the Disclosure Agency, and my name is Victor Vigiani, and our producer, Don Emilio Zeno, is on the other end there, and we are speaking with Stephen Bassett, the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group. Before the break, Steve, we were talking about the whole Rubio Warner scenario and the hearings. Let's get into that, and then I want to sort of talk about the whole United States input globally about how they control the embargo. So you take over from there.
Sure. Well, quickly recap, I believe that this is heading for hearings, and that was the TTSA's agenda all along, and it's starting to play out, and these hearings are close. The reason why it's so critical is that that's the way it has to happen. So, as I said, if you've got weeks of hearings with multiple military witnesses and so forth testifying, the evidence will literally mount before the world's eyes, and then at some point, it will be quite comfortable for the president and top ranking members of the Congress, as well as top DOD people, to come together, meet, and conclude that, well, the evidence is convincing. Clearly, this is non-human craft, almost certainly from other planets, unless they're from within our own solar system. They're not humans. And so the extraterrestrial presence is real, and we'll announce that, and the president will come forward to announce it. And people will be nodding their head as the president makes this announcement, going, yeah, that's pretty much what I saw too. So everybody wins in this scenario. Everybody wins. And in a minute, I'm going to make a very important statement that you probably have not heard before. But why does everybody win? The Congress wins because the Congress will be critical to this task. In other words, it will be holding the hearings, the committee chairs will be stars, the committee members asking the questions will be seen by hundreds of millions of people. It's a nonpartisan subject, clearly, so it won't be about a political posturing. That'll go over great. Mm-hmm. The two political parties will clearly also benefit from it.
Yeah.
Right? The president will obviously get an enormous political legacy from this, winner there. The military will get a lot of credit because military witnesses will be the key focus. We've already seen cooperation from the Navy and elsewhere. There'll be more of that. And so the DOD is going to be perceived as being on the side of the truth here, right? Helping to make this happen. It wins. The American people win because they finally get the truth, or the core truth about the ET presence, and a lot more that will come in the post-disclosure world. So the American people win. The world's people, obviously, also win. Right? So everybody wins. Why is this important? This is one thing I've learned in activism. And it's very true. If you study activist movements in the past, this constantly comes up. When it comes to politicians and nations, corporate leaders, and any other institutional people and organizations having to do the right thing, to undo a wrong, to change course, the one thing that is foremost in their mind is, how can I look good? Yeah. And this has become endemic in American politics. I think every politician in this country, with a few exceptions, gets up every morning, and not with, how can I serve the people better? How can I get this bill passed? Is this, how can I look good today? Everything is, how can I look good? And in the case of the ET issue, it is a real big problem. So what I'm saying is that everything that you've been seeing going on for the last 3 years has to be viewed with two things in mind. First of all, and you want to remind yourself every time you see an article or something on television about, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and we said that the United States government has known there was an extraterrestrial presence since no later than 1947. Known. And have had craft vehicles, no later than 1947, probably more than one, and has embargoed that information. So if somebody says, yeah, we're starting to investigate ETs, and the press covers it like, wow, they haven't been doing this, but now they're investigating. No, they have been investigating this phenomena every day for 70-some years. They've known. So if they've known all this time, what's going on? What's going on is a massive public relation maneuver of epic proportions. In other words, the problem the government and many others face, including scientists, academics, and others, is not how can we tell the people the truth, how can we end the truth embargo, but rather how can we end the truth embargo and come out of it looking like roses, right? Mm-hmm. How can we come out roses? And that is not easy. I mean, they could just come out and say it. There's a lot of ways it could take place, and they would be brutalized. They would be hammered. But if you tweak it just right, if you, you know what, you can, and that is why it's unfolding. That's why it's taken so long. That's why it's unfolding even now slowly. It is a public relations maneuver on the part of the DOD, the Navy, the Army, the Air Force, the CIA, the Congress, the White House, you name it. It is a public relations process, which I fully support because people like to look good. And that's not a terrible thing. And if you can create a win-win-win situation, that's also good, because after disclosure, the work really begins. That's the post-disclosure world.
All right.
And so that is what is going on. And what I am telling people now is this. Those hearings are close. I believe they could and should happen as early as February, certainly March. Now, there has been a minor glitch in that the craziness of the last 4 years isn't over yet. Before the recent developments, I was very much thinking, I think February, got to get it done in February. But as you know, the president was impeached again, and there's going to be a Senate trial, starts on the 8th, it'll probably run to about the 22nd. So that's the end of February.
Right.
So March would be the soonest. And if those hearings get underway, I don't believe they will go on for more than a few weeks before the president will be forced to make, not forced, but will yeah. make an announcement. Mm-hmm. So that's how close we could be finally to disclosure. And I think some other things you want to talk about, but before we close, mm-hmm. I want to tell your listeners why that those hearings have to take place soon and not later. But I think you had some other things you wanted to do.
Yeah, just very quickly, and get back to exactly the point that you wanted to make. But one of the concerns that I have is all that you're talking about and this having the basket over this information for so long, how has the United States government or the governance or whoever's behind the embargo, the truth embargo, how have they managed to control other countries and not sort of separating or disassociating themselves from... Well, we'll be the first ones to disclose. What's that dynamic? How did that happen?
It's a very complicated dynamic. The history of the truth embargo is extraordinary. I wish I had the attention span to write a book about it, but many will be written about it. I mean, the real history of it. And frankly, we need disclosure for it to be done right. I mean, a lot has got to be learned about the inside activities and documents accessed to really do it. But what we know from the outside looking in is this. The ET, modern ET era begins in 47 with the massive increase in sightings and the crash at Roswell. And at the same time, 47 was also essentially the beginning of the Cold War, in my opinion. That's when it really gets underway. Because in 47, we passed the National Security Act. We converted the OSS into the CIA, shortly thereafter the NSA, mm-hmm. and we got real mm-hmm. serious about the fact that we knew by 47 that the Soviet Union was our enemy. And there was an ideological conflict, and the Soviet Union had atomic bomb technology and hydrogen bomb technology, and they inevitably were going to build them, which they did.
Mm-hmm.
They also had missile technology. They were going to build those, which they did. And I think the mindset of our security intelligence community at that time was, well, the next war is going to be nuclear. It'll be World War III. It'll be nuclear with the Soviet Union. And so from that moment on, from that point forward, the intelligence community and our defense community were operating on the assumption that we have a job to do, and that's to protect this country from annihilation. And everything else is secondary. And simultaneous with that, they knew there were ETs here. They knew they had some of their technology. I don't know whether initially they could do anything with it or understand it, but they had it. And they knew the implications of that was massive. And so they had both of these things in their intelligence files circa 1947. And they weren't sure what to do with it. And things were a little rocky there for a couple of years. Roswell almost got out completely, but they were able to put that back in the can. And then whatever their plans were, 1952, things went crazy with the huge sightings over Washington over a week's period. So they got crapped all over the Capitol. So that's when they got really serious, had the Robertson panel, and started building the truth embargo on the ET issue.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we talking about here? It means the United States, by 52, was absolutely serious that this issue was going to be embargoed indefinitely while we figured out what the hell the ET thing was about. And by the way, are we going to have a nuclear war with the Soviet Union? Now, guess what? All of our allies, every non-communist country in the world, knew damn well that we were the reason, the principal reason, why they weren't saluting statues of Hitler. We saved the world from the communist, the Axis threat, rather, fascist threat.
Mm-hmm.
We were the most powerful nation in the world and the only nation with the resources and the military to defend the non-communist world. And so they were informed one way or another, if they didn't figure it out on their own, that on massive national security issues like, I don't know, mm-hmm. the Soviets accidentally drop a nuclear bomb, I mean, an unexploded nuclear bomb in your nation, you're going to deliver that to us, mm-hmm. okay? Get it? If we need to use part of your country to surveil, you will allow it, and you will not discuss the ET issue. It is embargo. That is not hard to understand. Why on earth would any nation during the Cold War want to anger the United States? Why would you do that? We already showed in Vietnam that when you really irritate us, we will send 500,000 troops. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah, we'll find a reason we'll find a reason.
Yeah, control them. I think that with few exceptions, we had their full cooperation. Absolutely, nothing to be gained by screwing around the ET issue. A lot to lose if you want to go against the national security policies of the U.S. Now that leaves the communist world. So why didn't the communist China or Soviet Union disclose? They could have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not worried about North Korea, frankly. They were basically a failed state from the day they were born. But the two major nations in the communist world could have disclosed, and they didn't. Was that because they were going along with the United States? I doubt it. They didn't disclose because these are extremely, at that period, ideological control states with autocratic rulers controlling everything the population does, because you had to do that in order to keep your power. Brutal, a lot of internal enemies. And so I think they concluded that the last thing we want to do is tell the Chinese people, of which there were an awful lot, or the Soviet people, of which there were an awful lot, that, oh yeah, we're not alone, there's extraterrestrials here, and they can come and go, and we don't know what their philosophy is, they may have never read Karl Marx, but yeah, we just wanted you to know that. No way.
Right.
No way, that was going to make it much more difficult for them to, how would you say, keep their people in lockstep. The most extreme case being North Korea, absolute most extreme case of that, I think, in the world, lockstep. So they weren't going to disclose either. And so you take those two, put them together, boom, you've got global truth embargo for 70 years.
In cooperation, right. As usual, we have only scratched the surface of this. And I can really kind of understand and appreciate the way you let this narrative roll with respect to how things develop. That chronology, I think, is really important for people to understand, especially for those who, you know, you and I eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff, but there's a large constituency out there, Steve, who really don't have the same appreciation. So you really put it in a great context, and we're going to have you back to continue this.
Let me point out something to your listeners.
Look, okay,
if
sure.
If you want to get up to speed on this,
mm-hmm.
the fastest way, and so much is happening that I can't even keep up with it. If you go to paradigmresearchgroup.org
mm-hmm.
and you go to resources, print media archive, go to the print media archive, go back to October 11th, 2017, and start reading the articles, the earmarked articles going forward. And if you read enough of them, you will get a very good picture mm-hmm. of what is going on in chronological order, right? That's why I created that.
Right.
While you're there, subscribe to the PRG updates list. It's free. Drop in on disclosurewire.org podcast. Subscribe, please, to the YouTube channel. And also, please, follow me on Twitter. Follow Paradigm Research Group on Twitter. and Paradigm Research Group on Facebook. Now is the time to get on board. Now is the time to start paying close attention, because I expect developments, significant developments, to come very soon, though perhaps not until after the Senate trial is completed.
Well, Steve, thanks so much for your time. We do appreciate it. And as I said earlier, we'll definitely have you back for part two of the narrative by Stephen Bassett. Thanks a lot, Steve, and you take care of yourself now.
My pleasure, Victor.
The Files of the Disclosure Agency was recorded at the Zeeland Communications Studios in Toronto, Ontario. Series producer, Don Emilio Zeno. Sound engineer, Brian Thomas. Research, Victor Vigiani. Follow us on Twitter at Zeeland. That's Z-L-A-N-D. Let's talk again soon.